Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We're extremely lucky this time to have James Roberts, a.k.a. Dr. Fermento, the Dean of Alaska Beer Writers and Beer Drinkers, here on with us. So, hey, Jim, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing quite well, my friend, quite well at the end of the year here. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. So, hey, 2019, hell of a year, huh?
Crazy.
Let's talk about some of the things that have happened. I mean, we've had, what, by my count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 new breweries open and a new meadery. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, my thoughts on that are, you know, that much explosive growth in one year when we're in a declining economy only points to one thing, and that is that craft beer in the state of Alaska remains immensely popular despite the werewolf all the people to go out and pay for it to drink it, because we all know it's not cheap. But that being said, I still think that with six more, our market's not saturated by any stroke of the pen or by any pour of the pint, as the case may be. And so I think it's just great testimony that even in more populated areas, craft brewing is intensely popular in our state, and we make intensely good beer up here.
I would definitely second that. And, of course, it's not just the new breweries opening. We've got a lot of existing breweries are expanding. Cooper Landing's building a new location. Barnaby Brewing reopened after their fire. Bear Paw River, we had them on last month talking about their new location they're going to be opening in downtown Wasilla. Bleeding Heart Brewery's moving to a new location. Matanuska opened their downtown pub. Skagway Brewing, earlier in the year, they moved to a big new expanded location. So between new breweries and existing breweries expanding, you definitely have to say it's a bull market for Alaska beer right now.
Yeah, and don't forget Anchorage Brewing Company. They're going to bolt on another 3,000 square feet with a rooftop garden and an orchard, not to mention a special enclosure for a cool ship. So they're on the run. And then you look at what King Street did 2 years ago, and you can't get in the parking lot. So yeah, it's an amazing time to be part of craft beer in the state. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the flip side of the coin, which is Baranoff Island Brewing Company closing. Which was kind of a surprise, I guess, for me anyway. How about you?
Yeah, and it was definitely a surprise for me. It definitely caught me off guard. And, you know, I do not pry for the reasons of these things. I know that there were some rumors of overextension. There were some rumors of brand diversity and things like that. But that's, you know, that's only to be told by the brewers and only be told by the sad story that the people involved with that operation have to say. And I will miss them because I had a great affinity for their spruce beer. I thought they did one of the best. It's more on the lines of what Haynes was putting out, where it was more bubblegummy, which I find great favor of in a spruce beer, where it's less piney and more bubblegummy. And I always enjoyed them at the festival, and I always enjoyed when that seasonal release came out. So I'm sad to see them go. I'm sad to see any brewery go. This will make the demise of, I believe it's the 12th in the state, since I've been tracking this back in the early 90s.
Yeah, but it's only the second one since 2003. Because
that's correct.
Since after Aurora Borealis closed in 2003, we didn't have a lose another one other than Great Bear in Wasilla, which really went under because of partnership issues, not because of any issue with the company, as demonstrated by the fact now it's Last Frontier Brewing Company, same location and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing I always wondered about the Sitka business model is their decision to go and play in the statewide market. As much as I enjoy that because I love their beer, that has got to have been a tough, tough row to hoe when you're as isolated as you are in Sitka to try and distribute your product statewide. I mean, you compare them vis-a-vis to somebody like Ben Milstein and Kodiak or Paul Wheeler and Haynes, who aren't trying to do that. They're just trying to be the brewery for their place. I could see Baranoff Island being the brewery for Sitka, but boy, that's a tough to be the brewery for the state when you're located in Sitka.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot that goes with that as well too, especially if you're not expanding into a draft market. We've talked about this before, Bill, but you can always find space in a bar, if you know a publican or somebody wants to take a risk on your beer, it's tough to get beer on draft up here because there's a finite amount of draft handles.
Yep.
Most liquor stores will push some product aside to squeeze yours in on an end cap or wherever it fits on the floor in the store and take the risk there. But it's very expensive. Each one of those cases of bottles that they were sending, you know, a case of bottles is 11 pounds more than a case of cans. And every one of those pounds costs a brewery money to get product in and product out. So, yeah, good point on your part about the distribution decision there.
Well, you measured bottles versus cans. That's an interesting trend that I've been kind of following. I mean, obviously, for quite a while, we've been talking about how the popularity of cans up here in Alaska and how they really fit the Alaskan lifestyle. And, you know, we've talked about that a lot. But I'm seeing on a national level, reading magazines and such, that they basically are saying the bomber, the 22-ounce bottle, is on its way out. That people are not, that's not what they want anymore. They want 16-ounce cans, or they want 12-ounce cans, or they want 12-ounce bottles. But, you know, the bomber is on its way out, which I, part of me says, I really don't want it to go because I like drinking bombers. So, but have you noticed any trends in that regard?
No, I don't know. I don't know the stats on it, but I can tell you this. What's really revolutionized the brewery's ability to be viable is the canned beer market, and it's the revolution of not having the one can producer being Ball dominating the market and saying, hey, look, if you want to put your beer in cans, you're going to buy 100,000 blanks with your pre-printed labels on them now. Breweries are all transforming to rapid tooling canning lines where they can run 30 cases or less of one beer, change the labeling out because the labels are applied at the brewery instead of at the can manufacturer, and pump the second style of beer in and so forth. This is why you've seen such explosive diversity in operations like Midnight Sun,
right,
who pumps
right.
out a different can beer about every other week. But having that ability to do that's revolutionizing not what we drink, but what it's packaged in. What breweries are also very much so appreciating is the fact that a can, in deference to a bottle, you get the entire landscape of a can to put a label on, whereas a bottle, you're limited by the shape and you're limited by other factors in the glass. And you're seeing the evidence of this in some of the incredible artwork that's coming out from our local breweries that are commissioning artists to do design work and label work on their can product on a continuously rotating basis. Bear Paw River being a good example of that.
And yeah, of course, Kenai River down here is doing it as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and who can argue with, you know, the design mm-hmm. that Anchorage Brewing Company puts on its cans?
Right.
And then when I talk to probably a different news item, and we can defer, but when I talk to the new owners of Cassix and interviewed them, I was curious about if he had any idea as to was he going to change anything significantly in the brewery, you know, any plans for the future. He said, only one thing, we will be producing beer in cans as a first priority. And he wasn't even a can fan. But he has seen the light.
Yeah. Well, everybody seems to be, like you said, moving in that direction. I mean, I even notice Midnight Sun, they want to shift their termination dust. They didn't quite make it this year, but they did with the Arctic Devil into 12-ounce bottles. The thrust seems to be in the direction of smaller packages, you know, cans in particular. But everybody seems to be moving away from the good old-fashioned 22-ounce bomber.
That is being echoed in the crowler versus growler market as well. I think crowlers, even in the big 32-ounce format, are starting to outpace the growlers, primarily because of those main things that Alaskans really, really love about canned beer up here is what you mentioned, which is portability, weight, smashability, in other words, pack it in, pack it out. And all those things, whereas a crowler is really a delicate.
Yeah, of course,
they've come out with the stainless steel ones, and they've come out with all manner of fancy ones, but it's my prediction that the crowler market will actually become smaller. I think you'll be able to see 16-ounce crowlers or stuff like that.
So let's shift gears a second, and let's talk about what's been going on with the law. fun and games with the ABC board this year. I kind of get the feeling that maybe finally the beer drinking public in Alaska has had enough of the stupid rules that we've been living under for so long.
I can't talk so eloquently to the legal side of it. You know, my claim to fame is writing a beer column, and when I started doing that 22 years ago every week, I came up with a single writing objective. And a writing objective for anybody that's studying writing is, what do you want the reader to come away with when they're done reading whatever you wrote? And to me, that has always been to make people thirsty for good beer. Talking about crappy laws, talking about the troglodyte mindset of the people that govern alcohol in the state of Alaska doesn't make people thirsty.
It makes them angry.
Maybe that's my cop-out for not following a law as close as I should. But what I can tell you, it's tiring. It has at least in some format led to what was almost the demise of Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival this year, more on that later, had to do with the oppressive pressure from our new municipal government up here in Los Anchorage and other laws that have made it incredibly difficult to responsibly put on a beer festival even in the state. Then, in the shadow of that, or foreshadowing that, is the fact that now the assembly's up to raising the alcohol tax again. So it's an ever-ending battle protecting our ability as craft beer drinkers in the state and brewers to produce beer at an affordable cost and get them into the hands of the consumer, which is very disappointing to me.
Yes, you would think that in a state that's crying out for economic development, you know, on the one hand, this should be a great success story. We're opening breweries, breweries are being successful, people are getting hired, money is being made, taxes are being paid. The goal of the state should be to get the hell out of the way and let these businesses be successful. And that does not seem to be the philosophy that is being radiated by the governing authorities for alcohol in this state.
You know, I mean, I think they took a first great stab at that when they moved the Alcohol Beverage Control Board out from under the Department of Enforcement and put it into the Department of Commerce. But let's act like it's a commerce. Mm-hmm. You know, not a butt sore out there that needs to be managed and enforced and bird dogged to the point where it's impossible to do what our craft brewers do best, which is to provide good beer to the Alaskans that love it and to provide jobs and add to the economy like you described.
So you brought up the subject of the festival. Let's talk a little bit what you know about the new festival that's going to be the Alaska Craft Beer and Barley Wine Festival that's going to happen on the 31st and the 1st of February. Can you give us any details about that?
Yeah, in fact, just prior to talking to you, I was talking to Billy Opinski, founder, owner of the Humpy's Empire in the downtown corridor, maybe not as well known to other people, which is the co-partner in what was the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival for the past 25 years, past quarter of a century up here, when the event organizer, Steve Shepard of Aurora Productions, decided to pull the plug on the event, much to the chagrin of Mr. Opinski and company. He wasn't going to let that happen. So Billy immediately jumped into action and secured the Denina Center this year to put on the fest. The price will remain the same. It's $45 for the two sessions, and then the connoisseur session, which is the middle one on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, will remain $55, the difference in price directly benefiting the Brewers Guild of Alaska. So nothing has changed there. What I do know is the format will be slightly different. They're going to do, instead of having the tickets that everybody's kind of seen as useless script, the wristbands this year are going to have tear-off tickets, and admission price will get you two wristbands for a total of 20 each 2-ounce pours. Then, if your liver can handle it and you have the wherewithal and your servers don't deem you at a point where you don't need anymore, you can buy additional wristbands for $10. The change in venue is going to add a lot of value. They're moving from 19,000 square feet at the Egan Center to at least, depending on where this goes, and this is all pre-emergent information, to 24 or 36,000 square feet in the Denina Center.
Wow.
What's the big deal? Do we need more room? Hey, Aurora Productions managed to cram all of our breweries in that tight space, but if anybody's ever been there on a Saturday night or a Friday night, it's not the most comfortable place to be. So Billy's big objective here was to give our breweries and the attendees more breathing room for the same venue, which I greatly applaud. So those are the primary changes this year. Tickets have not gone on sale yet. That's in development. It looks like it will have to be a Ticketmaster derivative because that's what the Denina Center requires. They, you know, pretty well lock you into how you're going to sell script. Same setup. You'll have music. You'll have beer. You'll have food vendors, which they're going to give the food space first right of refusal to all the breweries up here that produce food or bring in their people to produce food. And then they'll kind of do it like they did it before, half inside, half outside food trucks and other, but it'll be 100% local. So the big news, the main thing to walk away from is the show goes on. It goes on a little later, 2 days before Super Bowl this year, but we will have a beer and barley wine festival in Anchorage.
So final question about that. Does that mean Alaska Beer Week is going to shift as well? Assume it
is. This is a question that I didn't ask Billy, okay. And I have not talked to the event organizer for Alaska Beer Week since they've been reaching out about a month ago. So that's a detail that's a great question, Bill, and I'll try to ferret down to the bottom of that. I'm not certain that the dates will change, but I don't know. The barley wine competition will go on. So for your Peninsula brewers down there, I'm hoping that they were brewing in anticipation and their beer just gets a little extra aging.
All righty. Well, hey, Jim, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy, busy day, I know, to talk to us. And I really do appreciate it. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
No, Bill, it's actually the opposite. I thank you for the time to do what I love to do best, which is stand on my soapbox about good beer in Alaska. And you're one of the primary contributors to that as well. So kudos for what you do. And let me know whenever I can be of any help to the industry.
All righty. Well, hey, you have a happy holidays. And if I don't see you before then, I will see you on the 1st of February at 2 o'clock
Sounds
in the
great,
afternoon,
buddy.
Man. All righty. Take care. Cheers. Thanks, Jim. This is Bye. Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here in KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Up next, we're going to talk about this month's beer style, and in keeping with the theme of the show, this month's beer style will be winter warmers. Since we're moving into the heart of the winter season, I thought this would be an appropriate style to talk about. Winter warmers are not technically a true beer style, but they can certainly be considered a widespread brewing tradition. The custom of brewing a stronger-than-normal dark ale for drinking against the chills of the coldest months of the year is likely as old as brewing itself in Northern Europe. Earlier unhopped or lightly hopped ales were particularly suited for being heated and spiced, giving rise to winter drinks such as ale posset, a drink consisting of piping hot ale mixed with bread, milk, sugar, ginger, and nutmeg. Other beer-based winter drinks included lamb's wool, a combination of hot spiced ale and roasted apples, and egg flip, made from hot mild ale mixed with eggs, brandy, and nutmeg. In Britain, winter ales were also flavored by the traditional method of floating spiced toast on their surface, a custom which survived at least until the start of the 19th century. The rise of hopped beer, which reacts badly to being heated, seems to have meant the decline of such hot ale drinks. However, drinkers continue to desire stronger, sweeter, and often darker beers during the winter months. In London in particular, this desire was met by the original Burton Ale. As I've discussed in a previous show, this now largely extinct style of beer was made by the brewers of Burton-on-Trent long before they began producing highly hopped pale ales for the India market, which were the ancestors of today's uber-popular IPAs. Burton Ale became a widely available beer in Britain, particularly during the winter months. Bass No. 1, the strongest Burton Ale in the company's range, was called in advertisements around 1909, quote, the winter drink. It was a very robust beer, and bottles from the first decade of the 20th century are still enjoyed occasionally today, over a century later. At least 8 London brewers were making Burton's in the mid-1950s, with Courage Brewing sending out cards to its pubs reading, quote, "Courage Burton is now on sale for the winter season." However, the fall in popularity of darker ales in the 1960s meant that Burton Ale almost disappeared, with the last one being brewed by Young's at Wandsworth in London. In 1971, Young's changed the name of its Burton Ale to Winter Warmer, reflecting its seasonal nature and particular appeal. Another London brewer, Fuller's, replaced its Burton with a strong bitter winter beer in 1969. 2 years later, this beer was renamed Extra Special Bitter, or ESB. It quickly became so popular that it moved from a seasonal brew to a year-round offering and inspired a host of imitators, both in Britain and the U.S. Speaking of the U.S., the tradition of winter warmer beers or seasonal old ales was revived, like so many other beer styles, in the mid-1970s onward by the growth of the craft beer movement. The seasonal beers are generally 5 to 8% alcohol by volume, have an emphasis on darker malts, and may incorporate spices, harkening back to the old custom of concocting drinks of heated and spiced ale. If you're looking to experience a traditional British interpretation of this style, Country Liquors in Kenai has been selling 500 milliliter bottles of Samuel Smith's Winter Welcome Ale for $3.99 a bottle. This brew is currently celebrating its 30th year of production and falls well within the spectrum of a modern British winter warmer. Looking at beers produced locally, Kenai River Brewing's Winter Warlock Old Ale would certainly fit broadly within the winter warmer category. While unspiced, it's brewed at above average strength and released each year on October 1st. For its take on a winter seasonal, Alaskan Brewing produces its winter ale each year, flavored with Sitka spruce tips, a uniquely Alaskan version of a spiced winter warmer. A similar style of beer to the winter warmer is the Belgian-style strong dark ale. In this style, Cynosure Brewing of Anchorage produces No, while Midnight Sun Brewing for several years has brewed its Monk Mistress, a beer in the same style. In the past, Midnight Sun has also released Dark Night, which it explicitly calls a winter warmer. This limited release beer weighs in at 8.7 alcohol by volume, 30 IBUs, and was aged in used port wine barrels. Finally, St. Elias Brewing is currently cold conditioning its own Belgian dark ale for a likely release in February. Whether you choose a local example or one brewed outside, winter warmers make an excellent beer choice as we all endure the cold and dark of an Alaskan winter and dream of the coming of spring. We'll be right back with our next segment here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation. 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Up next, we've got an interview with Faye Schoenberg, who is one of the co-owners, along with her husband, Richard, of Calgon Homebrew Supplies, the new homebrew supplier that's open here on the peninsula. Hello, Faye. How are you doing today?
I'm great.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. So this is really good news. We haven't had a homebrewer supply here in the Central Peninsula for quite a while. So why don't you tell us your background? How did you guys end up in the homebrew supply business?
Well, about 7 years ago, at Christmas time, my daughter-in-law and I decided to get our husband's homebrew starter kits. And that we got here and locally. And our husbands became crazy about the art of brewing beer. We were buying supplies in Anchorage. We were buying supplies in Homer. But there was no place here locally to do it. So my husband and I, we started talking about what this area could use, and we were hoping that everyone else would enjoy the local homebrew supplies. And that's what happened, how we got it started. We are off the beaten track, so we opened in our shop. It is off of Chikansky Road. We are at 37202 Ohana Circle, and that is, you take Chikansky all the way down around the fields and take a left on Circle Park. Then you're going to take a right on Mooseberry. Ohana Circle is on the left. You just come down there and we dead end right in our parking lot.
That sounds good. And I understand you got most of your inventory is, you bought out a homebrew store in Wasilla, is that correct?
Yes. We bought out Alaska Homebrew, and that happened, and he closed down and moved to Belgium. So he sold us the rest of his inventory, and then we've been working to get the rest of the supplies that we might need to get started ever since.
And how long have you been open?
3 weeks now.
Okay, great. What all do you have for us homebrewers out there who need something?
Yes, we have yeast, we have all the base malts and some specialty malts. We have the actual Cooper's DIY beer starter kits with the brewing extracts. We have starter kits for both wine and beer starter kits. We carry liquid extracts and dry malts. We also have a large selection of hops and a good selection of yeast. And we're always willing to do special orders for people. As far as wines, we have some wine kits that are kind of a variety. We have some fruits and then some of the Zinfandel, Merlot, Chardonnay, Pinot Grigio. So just to get them started, we carry some of the honeys for making mead. We have chillers, we have kegs, we have wine bottles. We hope to have what you might need, and if not, be able to special order it.
Sounds like you got a really good selection. I look forward to getting out there to check it all out. Is there anything else you'd like to let our audience know?
Just that we are right now open through the holidays. We're open Wednesday through Sunday. The hours may be changing after the holidays. We're just new and getting started and figuring out what works for the community. I'm always willing to take phone calls, or we've got a Facebook page, Calgon Homebrew Supplies, and like our page, share it, and come by and see us.
Well, great. It's wonderful that you guys are open here on the peninsula to support us homebrewers. We really appreciate it. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you too, Bill.
All righty. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
This is Sal Cassano, host of Dead Musicians. Join me from 7 to 9 each Saturday night to hear all your favorites from yesteryear. Let's celebrate all the late greats together here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. For our last beer gear of 2019, I thought you might be wondering what to do with that gift card you got for Christmas. Here are a couple of suggestions. In my feature this month, I talked about cellaring beer. If what I had to say piqued your interest, or if you're already cellaring beer, then I strongly recommend that you purchase a copy of Vintage Beer, A Taster's Guide to Brews That Improve Over Time by Patrick Dawson. To the best of my knowledge, this is the only book out there which focuses exclusively on cellaring beer. Dawson gives a list of easy-to-follow rules that lay the groundwork for identifying these cellar-worthy beers and delves into the mysteries behind how and why they age as they do. Beer styles known for aging well are discussed, and detailed profiles of commonly available beers that fall into these categories are included. There's also a short travel guide for bars and restaurants that specialize in vintage beer that gives the readers a way to taste what this new craft beer frontier is all about. At less than $12, this paperback could easily save you five times that amount in expensive cellaring mistakes. I know I wish I'd had it in hand before I set up my beer cellar, as it would have saved me at least that much. As long as I'm talking about Patrick Dawson, I should mention his other book, The Beer Geek Handbook, Living a Life Ruled by Beer. In it, Dawson provides everything anyone needs to fully live a life ruled by beer, from the 10 Beer Geek Commandments and the Beer Geek Hall of Fame, to guidance on what to drink, how and where to drink, how to gracefully correct an uninformed bartender, where to buy geek goods, how to flawlessly execute a beer tasting, how to plan the ultimate beer-centric vacation, and much more. It includes quizzes to help you determine your level of geekery, as well as witty illustrations by Greg Klestel. It's breezy and fun without being silly, and is chock full of beer knowledge. At under $10, it's a great read. Finally, in a bit of shameless self-promotion, I'd like to again remind everyone about my college class, The Art and History of Brewing. I'll be teaching this class from January through April at the Kenai River campus of Kenai Peninsula College. The class meets every Tuesday evening from 5:30 to 6:45 and includes lectures on beer history, brewing science, historic beer styles, cooking with beer, storing and serving beer, and even pairing beer with food. We taste a beer every week, some 15 different beers over the course of the semester. We tour all three of the local breweries as part of the class. If you're interested, call 262-0243 for more information. Our final quote this month comes from Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence, founder of the University of Virginia, and the third president of these United States. Beer, if drunk with moderation, softens the temper, cheers the spirit, and promotes health. With that, I wish you a cheerful spirit and good health in the new year. Until next time, cheers.